Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by some expert guests as we look ahead to the ISPS Handa World Invitational presented by Aviv Clinics and the second of three PGA Tour playoff events, the BMW Championship from Olympia Fields. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, that's right. It's time to introduce our special guests. We've got a couple of fantastic golf writers joining us. We've got Martin Matthews, aka Sundog Monkey, and also Matt Cooper. Before we look at the events this week, gents, let's go to last week. And we had some returns for you, Martin, one of your picks, I believe.
Adam Schenk. It was a funny one because, of course, he was my, shall we say, wild card long shot pick. And I was relying on Scottie Scheffler to give us the big run for our money, and that never really materialised. And Sam Burns, who I know a lot of people were on, was a little bit disappointing as well. But Schenk saved the day. I was on about 150 to 1. And while he didn't quite bag a full place return, he put a really nice final round together to sneak into a very good share of the place money. Actually had to hold a 20-foot par putt at the last to make it. And not wishing ill on any golfers after that, I spent sort of the next hour and a half watching sort of shot tracker as balls went in and out of the water on the back nine and what have you. So I think it was Spieth and Hovland both found the water on 18, and that helped a little bit. But then Taylor Moore birdied 18, and that cost a bit. But yeah, in the end, it was a reasonable week.
Yeah, good to hear. I mean, it's never, no such thing as a stress-free win. You talked about people going in the water. One of those people was Lucas Glover, who went on, of course, to win back-to-back weeks. He's thrown everything, spanner in the works for the Ryder Cup. Matt, firstly, did anything from your side? And I think if not, a dear friend of the show, Dave Tindall, you were on a chat with him, podcast, and he did have him.
Yeah, it was a week of Crash and Sam Burns for me. Absolutely nothing out of that week. Instead, I just saw just how impressive Lucas Glover was. Dave Tindall, as you said, friend of the podcast, he was very chipper about Lucas Glover's chances. And just like I said, he's in fantastic form. Ever since he's got hold of that broomstick putter, he's been in great nick, and he didn't see there was any reason why he couldn't continue that. I think he was expecting him to place more than to win, but he was very, very impressive. And I was actually at the AIG Women's Open last week, and in the media centre, we had one of the Weasley brothers. I'm not actually a massive Harry Potter fan, so I'm not really sure whether he was Fred or George. I did a little bit of Googling to try and find out which, but it did occur to me that there was a bit of a link with Lucas Glover, because possibly his broomstick is the most famous after Harry Potter's. It's certainly got the magical powers. He might not be able to fly, but he's certainly getting himself all the way to Rome this year, I think, with the way that putt has improved. So, yeah, odd little link between Walton Heath and the Deep South.
Okay, well, that's it for last week. And it's time to get into the BMW Championship from Olympia Fields. Yes, the BMW Championship returns to Olympia Fields for the first time since 2020. It was also the US Open course in 2003, which was won by Jim Furyk, which may give us a bit of a identikit winner angle in. Matt, let's come to you first, because it's a course we haven't seen loads, but want to know more about, and a lot has been written about it. Someone described it as a death by a million cuts, I saw quoted. I don't know your take on that, but anything else we should be looking at before we're making our selections this week?
I think it tends to be just kind of typical of traveling US majors, by which I mean the PGA Championship and the US Open. It's got those traditional background. Willie Park Jr. was responsible for it well over 120 years ago. He's created it, and then it's kind of like been sort of smothered in thick rough as the years have gone on. So it's very typical of what we've come to expect from the 1980s onwards with US Open and US PGA hosting courses. And when John Rahm and Dustin Johnson made the playoff there 3 years ago, they're only four under par. I think there were only four golfers under par when Jim Furyk won the US Open there in 2003. I think it's going to be quite a tough week unless they do something unusual to the course, but whatever happens, the rough is always going to be difficult because it's Kentucky bluegrass and that's very sticky, very hard work to get out of. This feels like a week where it's getting on the greens, try to two putt and just take any single putt that you ever get. I don't think we can expect anything different to that. I think it'll be it's a week made for guys who like hitting greens and being mentally quite strong.
Yeah, great. I mean, you mentioned there the last winner here was John Rahm, that epic finish with a 65-foot putt. I think it was on the end there. Someone who's going for a three-peat, though, different course, is Patrick Cantlay, who beat Scott Stallings last year by a shot at Wilmington and DeChambeau in a six-hole playoff in 2021. He is just one of a long list of names who have won this tournament at short odds. And obviously, it's a limited field, but the last four, maybe even five, they've been 25-1 and under. Do you think this tournament is one that tends to go towards a short-priced winner, Martin?
Yes, is a short answer, Ollie. Once we get into these playoffs, of course, you see the occasional shot winner every now and again, and you know you can never say never. Obviously, we've seen with the majors this year with Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman that these biggest events aren't necessarily just the sort of compass of the short price players, as it were. But yeah, what we tend to see in these playoffs, two things. One, the big names tend to come to the fore. You look at your list of winners here over the recent years, or I say here in this event over the recent years, and obviously you've got back-to-back from Cantlay, you've got Rahm, host of big names down the line. And they're all, as you say, the short odds players. And of course, partly because we've only got 50 guys left now. I think momentum is the massive thing that we've seen in the playoffs over the years as well. So it's very common for a guy to have a good start as you know, on week one, and then you know, carry that forward on week two, or obviously in the old days where we had four events, take week two into week three. Cantlay's an obvious example from recent years. Billy Horschel, when you go back a bit further. So, I mean, looking down your list of winners here, or I keep saying here in this event over the last 10 years or so, we got Cantlay twice, Rahm, we got Justin Thomas, we got Keegan Bradley, who's a bit of a Northeast specialist, Northern State specialist, where we tend to be for this. Dustin Johnson, who was in the playoff with Rahm here last time, Jason Day in his peak. Big names, and I would expect a big name. Whilst I think there's some value that I'll come on to with from an each way point of view, I expect a big name to be coming out on top again this week, absolutely.
Yeah, it is a stacked field, and there's lots of interesting storylines with people on the bubble. Basically, that top 30 is the magic number you need to be around. We've got Rose, Fitzpatrick, Matsuyama, and Young just outside it, and Hatton, Spieth, and Burns just inside. So he may say goodbye to a few big names then, likely will. But in your research, it's quite different when we haven't seen a course too much, Matt. And there are a few things stood out to me. No par fours were under par in 2020, scoring-wise. It was the fifth hardest course in 4 years. It was where they played here with that winning score, I think, fourth under, because it is 7,400 yards, nearly par 70. And the weather forecast looks wet, so it's getting even longer. And I think I read drivers hit over 75% of the time. So, I'm imagining that obviously all goes into it. Do you look more at course form? Because Will Gray sent this in, only 50 players only 50 players and only 23 played when the tournament was last year. So what do you go off when you don't have that course form to fall back on? What do you put like the priority in your research?
I think, I've tended to go with sort of form in the majors. Everything that you've just said there, you know, very difficult par fours, very difficult scoring, rough that's thick and hard work, damp conditions that are going to make it even more difficult to reach those greens. I think also we've got one of those classic things. I was reading something that Tony Finau said when it was almost as if he was harking back to sort of when Jim Furyk played and won the US Open, and saying, you know, it's about hitting the fairways from the tee. I don't think length is going to be a big thing, is what he said ahead of that week. And then he finishes fifth. John Rahm and Dustin Johnson are up there. So is Hideki Matsuyama. All four of those guys were in the top five, and all four of them can hit the ball a long way. I think length and hitting as many fairways as you can, but I think less than 50% of the fairways were hit by the entire field here 3 years ago. So ultimately, you're going to have to hit quite a few shots from the rough. So being as close to the green is probably as and the advantage that you're going to be able to get. So I mean, so it's a major championship hosting course, and I've gone with form on those types of courses. I've tried to keep it simple in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is a major test. And Ron Kloss was the guy I follow. Give a shout out to him, who always throws in the great statistics. And one thing that came of it, and I know this is a tendency for some previews and writers, Martin, is some people just get it done and win on hard courses. You look at Justin Rose, often one at scores when they're sort of six under and higher. And along those lines, when you know you're playing with par is a good result. Has that come into a factor in your picks before we get into them, Martin?
Yes, again, I mean, very much as Matt says, I look at what you cast as the correlating courses. So not just the major championship courses, of course, major championship form is a very good pointer for this week. But what you class as those classical sort of tough tests, the big boy courses, as I call them, Torrey Pines, Muirfield Village, Quail Hollow, Bay Hill, Riviera, that you know the sort of I'd be looking at those rather than, you know, obviously sort of somewhere like TPC River Highlands or something like that. So yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at form on those tougher courses. You know, sort of history of winning those tough, high scoring events, basically. And obviously, Rahm won here with a minus four total, or went into a playoff with a minus four total here back in 2020. And I'm definitely looking at courses that are a grind, shall we say.
Okay, great. Well, let's have a look at the top of the market, because it is a veritable who's who of champions on tough courses. We've got Rory McIlroy this morning has come in a bit in his joint level with Scotty Scheffler at 15-2 to win. Scotty obviously was heavily backed last week and couldn't get it done. Then John Rahm just behind them at 10-1. Patrick Cantlay just missed out last week at 12-1. And then you get into the later teams with Schauffele, Hovland at 18s. And then Max Homer, Tommy Fleetwood, Colin Morikawa, and Jordan Spieth at 25-1. And that sounds like nearly the whole field, but that's the top 10 of 50, and some great names in there. So let's find out now if you guys have picked any of them as your headline pick, starting with you, please, Matt.
I've gone with Xander Schauffele. And ultimately, I just made the decision that he's very good on US Open golf courses. Six out of his seven starts have been top tens. And then his form's been a bit sort of stuttery in recent weeks, but his approach stats were really, really good last week. And I'm taking that as a good hint. In fact, his performance at first glance doesn't look that great, tied 24th at TPC Southwind, but it's actually his second best effort there in six tries. He's only once made any kind of headway at that golf course. So again, I'm taking that as a little bit of an upward tick. And then I just think that he can hit the ball a long way. He can find as many fairways as anybody who hits that distance is likely to. His head's, when he's on it, his head likes this sort of test. And then also he was, I've just completely lost my train of thought, so I hope you can cut that little bit out. Then finally, I just think there's a slight sense with him. I think he's sort of trending towards finally getting the win that he's not picked up since the middle of last summer. And ultimately, I just didn't quite fancy the top guys. Patrick Cantlay especially. I know he's going for this three-peat, but I'm just not quite convinced at the moment that he's quite got it, even though he played so well at TP Southwind for such a long time last week. And then I know Martin quite likes one of the top three. I couldn't make much headway with either of them. So eventually it was like Schauffele, almost like he was the best of everybody below 20 and under.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get where you're coming from, Matt, with Schauffele, with obviously his US Open record, because as we've said already, US Open is certainly a great pointer for this week. He's a player. I know he had his little spurt last summer, but he's a player I sometimes find a little frustrating, to be honest, because I guess, like a lot of the top players, he's in contention so often and just sort of doesn't quite get it done a lot of the time, but certainly not arguing with your selection. But to me, from the top of the board, Rahm was the obvious standout, because I would have, I can see Rory's flying, and I can see why he's favourite, obviously. But Scotty does seem to have slightly gone off the boil, and as I saw some of my pain last week, and the putter obviously is something he's still desperately searching for some joy with. So, but I was quite happy to see Rahm at third favourite. To me, I would have had him much closer to the top two, if not alongside Scotty. Because of his affinity to this type of track, of course, he won here last time. He has such a great history of playing well on courses and then playing well on them again. Torrey Pines, Muirfield Village, which we obviously talked about as you know, a comparable type of classical tests, if you like. He to me was the obvious selection from the top, particularly is because he started slowly last week, of course, and on Thursday, 73, and I think he was basically saying he couldn't play anymore or something like that, or he couldn't drive the golf ball and what have you. And then by the weekend, he had it on a string off the tee. So as all ifs and ands, of course, and as I said in my written preview, if his 73 had been a 67 on Thursday, he would have finished sort of sixth or seventh or something like that and would have been very much on everyone's radar this week. But instead, there's an element of, well, you know, John Rahm's been struggling a bit, etc. But, you know, let's not forget he was second at Hoylake. So he quietly came through the field, and I expect a really big performance from him this week. He's got everything that we need for this type of test. He's obviously, along, of course, with Scheffler and McIlroy, he's right up there in all the sort of tee to green stats. But unlike Scheffler and McIlroy, the putter doesn't misbehave quite as much, and certainly not as much as it does for Scotty. So Rahm was a standout for me. I was actually on him. We talked a lot about the three-peat. I thought perhaps you were talking about my Olympia Field three-peat, because showing my age, I was on Jim Furyk back in 2003, and I was on Rahm here 3 years ago. So I'm on for a three-peat as well at Olympia Field. So
wow.
So Rahm was a standout for me. I've gone 4 points win, 10-1 for him on my first selection.
There you go. I mean, I can't believe people are talking Cantlie over you. I mean, it seems like you've got to go Cantlie for both of you to hit the three-peat, but we'll leave that by the by. And absolutely, John Rahm is spot on. He's I mean, Rory's always dubbed as the king of the sort of sneaky good finish and backdoor top tens, but Rahm isn't far behind. There's often a good final round or weekend put together for him. So he was to around 10-1 mark, and that's a 4-point win from you, Martin. So feeling bullish on that. And Matt Cooper was with 1 point each way, 18-1 for Zander. Matt, who are you following up with your second outright pick?
My pick is, I'm 12 of the 15 winners of this tournament have been major championship winners. So I wanted a major championship winner on side, but I also wanted a nice juicy price. And the man for me is Keegan Bradley, who you can get at 70-1. He won the PGA Championship about a decade ago. He's also won Aronimink, which is another major championship hosting golf course. And this year he's won the Zozo Championship and the Travelers River Highlands. Now, that second win is going to be a much tougher prospect this week. But he knows how to grind if he needs to do so. He was second at Torrey Pines. Martin was saying how, you know, major championship golf courses on the schedule, they could be a good point of this week. So he's in good form there. And I tell you, a little thing that I really like about Keegan Bradley is, remember Firestone that used to host the old WGC Bridgestone Invitational? That was a par 70. That was bent power grass. That asked a lot of questions of ball striking, and it was a par 70 of about 7,400 yards. So it had a lot of similarities with this week. And Keegan Bradley absolutely loved that tournament, and indeed was a winner 1 year. So I think he's a really nice price for a guy who's a double winner this year, a winner on a major championship course, and liked a course that was very, very similar to this one.
Yeah, he was on my radar as well, Matt. So, I totally, you know, like I said with Scheffler, I totally see where you're coming from. But Bradley was very much on my radar. And, of course, the other thing that we haven't mentioned yet around him and in the more general conversation is, of course, the magic two words, Ryder Cup. He obviously does need a big week on that front as well. His name's, with so much competition, his name's gone now slightly out of the radar, as it were, compared to, you know, some of the others who are coming onto the radar, such as Mr. Glover. And So he needs to remind Captain Zach he's there, doesn't he? So I could see him, and he likes this part of the world. My second guy, and I like your comments about major championship winners, because I'm going for Hideki for my second main pick. This is very much, again, coming back to what I touched on earlier about the playoffs momentum. I guess sort of 4 p.m. American time on Sunday afternoon, or maybe 5 p.m. because they had the rain delay, didn't they? Hideki wasn't anywhere near being in this field this week. And then he produces 5 under run from 13 through to 17, you know, sort of birdie, birdie, eagle, or birdie, birdie, par, eagle, birdie, or something. Suddenly he's in. So to me, he is the archetypal playing on house money this week. You know, he pretty much, I'm sure, thought his season was done, found it out of nowhere. And he now has a chance to basically salvage what has been, you know, for a player of his caliber, a fairly disappointing season. A lot of sort of 15ths, 23rds, all that kind of thing. Obviously, he's struggled a little bit with his neck injury that seems to be a common factor for him, but he looked fine last week. So I just thought, we've seen it so often, players, you know, carry momentum on in the playoffs. He is another player, of course, who has a track record on tough courses. He's won at Muirfield Village. He was third here, let's not forget, back in 2020. Obviously, he's a Masters champion, so we've got a lot of correlation there with Rahm, of course. But you know, it wasn't so much about necessarily looking at his stats or anything like that. It's just about, we know he's a big time player. He's not really produced yet this year, and he's now got what I suspect was an unexpected chance to produce. I think he rides the wave onwards, basically. At 33-1, obviously with, 7 places or 6 places, depending on who you look at, available this week, I was happy to take his momentum and run with it. So he's my second pick.
Great, yeah, 1.5 points each way you've given there. And Keegan Bradley at nearly double those odds, 70-1, and also a point each way, Matt. And we haven't had you on, Martin, since we've got this beautiful new addition where you can throw a couple of other names into the ring, because everyone has their fantasy teams and a few selections. So we'll come to you in a second. But Matt was there. I think you're feeling confident. You've only given one more name. You've just got a trio, triumphant to bring it home this week. So who are we looking at?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Canada's Corey Connors, all the seas. He hits a lot of greens in regulation, and I think that's going to be important this week. And if you just take a little glance at this year's US travelling majors, he didn't do very well at the US Open, but never has, which is a bit of a concern. But he was top 2 through 54 holes at the PGA Championship. Looked in really good nick until after struggling in the final round. 40-1, widespread price with him, and I think he's got quite a good chance.
So my two extra picks, my two extra picks are Sahith Theegala and Pat Rogers. So briefly on them both. Sahith Theegala, again, I see him as a player who likes these tough classical tests. He's performed well at Riviera, Torrey Pines. He has a top 5 at Muirfield Village. And he seems to, we know what sort of player he is. He's a player who rises to the challenge, not sort of just saves his best for a sort of an opposite field event and then shrinks when the big boys are there. He produces the big performances in the big events, obviously 9th at his Masters debut earlier in the year. But the summer's been a little bit slower for him, missed cuts over in the UK. He's now showed a bit of something last week, 13th. He's right on the bubble. So my one slight concern is, will he just try and do enough to get that top 30? But beyond that, you know, we only go back a few months and he was 33-40-1. So I was happy to chance him at a bigger price. My second big price outsider, Patrick Rogers's wife, Patrick Rogers is married to an English lady, all big Arsenal fans, but we can't hold that against them. I believe that Patrick Rogers's wife was a, and I hope I don't get castigated for getting this wrong, but I believe she was a stunt lady on the Harry Potter films, or a stunt double in some capacity.
Wow.
Or yes, so I might be wrong, so apologies any Patrick Rodgers fans or Harry Potter fans out there if I've got this wrong. So, so there is a link to Harry Potter for you. But with regards to Patrick, he got in 50th spot to this event. So it was obviously a massive relief, I'm sure, to him to make the top 50. And he returns this week to a course that, and I know we're going back quite a few years, but he won back-to-back on in college and absolutely loves Olympia Fields, won in 2011 and 2012 college events here. It's 3 hours from where he grew up in Indiana, so the sort of you know, 3 hours in America is very different to 3 hours in England, because you sort of might say in England, well, I was brought up in Birmingham and I'm playing in Newcastle this week, what the hell's the connection? Well, it's 3 hours away. But in America, of course, such a broad country that when you get into your general area where the sort of grasses are comparable, the seasons are the same, temperatures, etc., it does give that affinity to home, as it were. I remember Adam Schenk, who we were talking about earlier, he played really well at the John Deere a few years back, and he said how it reminded him of you know, being back on the farm in Indiana when he grew up and what have you, because of the sort of John Deere connection. So so anyway, I'm rounding slightly off the track, but Patrick Rodgers, he comes from that neck of the woods. He loves the course. He knows the course well. He got in 50th spot, so he really is, again, a bit like Hideki, playing on the house money now. He's in everything next season. 200 to 1. I can see him producing a big week. As a fantasy pick, I think he could be a really good shout, you know, to have a really strong, solid week. He does also have a great record, again, on tough golf courses. You know, he's popped up on a lot of the courses we've been talking about in the past. So there you go. And Harry Potter to boot as well. So what do you want?
Harry Potter to boot. Yeah, his wife, Jade, not only was a stunt coordinator, she was Draco Malfoy's wife in the 8th and final Harry Potter film. A little cameo as well. So you've got it bang on, Martin. And all those fans who are going to send in angry emails and tweets now can just rest easy. That's fine.
I have never watched a Harry Potter film, I should say. So I have no idea who Draco Malfoy is or any of it. So, yeah, it's not my
That's fine. Thing, I'm glad you can tell her you loved her work, though. Just lie anyway. That's fine. Beautiful. So we've got, odds there. DeGala's around the 80s mark. Patrick Rodgers, 200s. And Corey Connors in the 40s as well. And I think overall that pretty much summarizes very nicely everything that's going to go down at Olympia Fields, with Matt feeling very confident with just a few picks. And speaking of just three picks, Martin going for the three-peat along with Patrick Cantlay. Before we jump in and have a look at the return of the DP World Tour with the ISPS Handa Invitational presented by Aviv Clinics, it's time for a game of Who Am I? Everyone's favourite game. We saw a smirk there from Matt, who's already got a point because of his Patrick Rodgers. I'll give him half a point, semi-connection there. Who am I this week? There's only 50 players in America, so I'm bringing it back. The DP World Tour's returning. We love these fields and some different names. So we're gonna go with someone else in that field this time, over in Northern Ireland. And let's begin. So how it works, in case you're a first-time listener, where have you been, firstly? But in case you don't know how it works, we'll give you five clues. Each time the guys can jump in if they've got an idea and try work out who is the person I'm talking about in the field, who is my fancy for the week. Let's open up with, I am named after my dad's golfing hero. Clue number one, Matt Cooper.
Is it Matthew Southgate?
It is not Matthew Southgate. Next one is, now I'm working how hard to go here, but I played my junior golf at the same club as Sir Nick Faldo.
Sandy Scott.
No hand up, but that's fine because it's the wrong answer. Matt Cooper.
Is it Tom Lewis?
Matt Cooper, you're too good at this. Yeah, absolutely is. Matt Tom Lewis. I'll give you some of the others. You can let me know if you'd got them. So it's, I won an event on the European Tour at the time, which it was, in just my third start as an affiliate member. So that was 2011. And what a year it was in 2011. He did that. The fourth clue, I was a star in the successful 2011 Walker Cup team. And then I shot the lowest round by an amateur in the Open when I was paired with my dad's favourite golfer, who is Tom Watson, in 2011, which I think was Royal St George's. Very good, Matt Cooper. I think you're still leading the way in it. Martin just behind, Ben Coley propping up the bottom of the table in the Who Am I? But he'll be back because he loves it that much. Perfect. Now it's time to have a look at the DP World Tour in more detail. Yes, that's right. It is the ISPS Handa Invitational, presented by Aviv Clinics. And we're back after a few weeks off, and it is very good to be back. This event is co-sanctioned by the DP World Tour, the LPGA Tour, and the Ladies European Tour, which has two separate tournaments for men and women professionals running concurrently. How it works is the men and women, they make a 36-hole cut, and they'll have a weekend shootout over at Galgorm Castle in Northern Ireland. Let's come to you, please, first, Martin. Galgorm Castle, we saw it last year as well with Ferguson winning there, wasn't it? Ian Ferguson in the end. What can you tell us about the course? And I mean, there is already having a bit of action going on. The G4D Tour is obviously there, and I think Kip Pepper was leading overnight as they go into their second round. So maybe we'll get an idea of conditions from any of those clips and how the course is playing. But what can you tell us about the venue?
Well, we've seen it on the DP World Tour. We've seen it for the last 3 years, obviously. Last year in this event, the year before in this event, and then also in 2020 it hosted the Irish Open. We've then got some history prior to that on the Challenge Tour for this event as well. So we've got a little bit to look at. And obviously we've got two courses in play this week, the other thing to say as well. So, and the second course has become, was changed, I should say. We've got a true links test for the second course this week. So that's something I'm sure we'll talk about a bit more. But Galgorm Castle, it's par 70. It's just over 7,100 yards, and it's a Parkland course, so sort of correlating Parkland form is certainly something that I've been looking at, and it's very much shown in the three editions on the DP World Tour, or the three events played on the DP World Tour over the last 3 years, that it's more about strategy. It's a tee to green, find your fairways, find your greens, and actually scrambling's been quite key here as well over the last few years. All the winners have been strong on that front, but if you look at you know, Ferguson, he's one of the best tee to green protagonists on the DP World Tour. John Catlin, who won the Irish Open here, similarly as well. And Daniel Gavin's had a great week in approach play when he won here also. So I wasn't looking for your sort of wild bombers paradise type players by any stretch. I was looking for those who plot their way around the course, and I think that's what we're looking for this week. Strategy, fairways, greens. There's a bit of dodgy weather about, I think, as well. I would say one thing I hadn't seen at the time we came on is tee times, I don't think, were out, and with Friday showing to look a little bit worse than Thursday, obviously, there is a danger that if your guy gets the links test on Friday, then that could put you sort of behind the eight ball slightly. So that's something I'd certainly be keeping an eye on. But not saying Galgorm Castle's a pushover in tough weather either. But a low round is possible out here. I mean, Ferguson opened up with 61 here last year, and nursed that round basically. So, fairways and greens basically, Ollie, I'd be looking for this week.
Okay, fairways and greens. I like it. And that obviously applies for both the men and women. We've seen a few of these events join the calendar, Matt, in terms of these split events and different. And we've even seen it Scandi mixed as well, where they play together. How much do you enjoy them? You're obviously quite involved in the women's game. You said you're at the AIG Women's Open as well. So how much do you enjoy these sort of variation, different formats that we get to see throughout the season?
Yeah, I really like them, and especially when you have a couple of courses. It means you can negotiate two big fields. I just think it adds more to for the fans. It's a bit like Wimbledon or the tennis majors. You've got two events going on at the same time, plenty of action. And I really like the way that they sort of stagger the women and the men at this event on the final 2 days. I really like it. I've also got a bit of insight into both these courses actually, because I've played them both. So that's quite handy. And Castle Rock is like one of those really fun tracks that you sometimes find on the links land. I'm really pleased that it's actually got a top event. It's not as good as Royal Port Rush or Port Stewart that are just up the coast, but it's kind of that next layer down. And I think just one of the most enjoyable afternoons golf I've ever had playing there. really lots of sort of sweeping shots. Contours are great. The visual, I'm not sure television will be there. I like to hope there'll be a bit of television coverage, but the estuaries and the beach is close by. It's fantastic to look at. And I think it'll be a test that will trip a few players up, actually. But what's always fascinated me is that Galgorm, as Martin said, it's a parkland course, and yet links specialists have actually done really well there down the years. Dan Housing was the first winner there, the Dutchman, who was brilliant in the amateur game, and all his best golfs come at the links as a professional. Ryan Fox is a winner of the Dunhill Links. Joachim Lagergren and Daniel Gavin's both very good at the Dunhill Links. Jack Senior is a brilliant open qualifier. Callum Hill and Ewan Ferguson both got good records on the links. At first, that seems like really weird. Why would you be good at why would links specialists be so good on a parkland? But I tend to think that actually trees frame holes and good links golf courses have dunes or nicely contoured land that frames holes. And what it actually is that golfers who like their holes framed by the landscape perform well in tree line courses and links land. And that's been a big factor for me in my picks this week. And I think it kind of explains why two apparently disparate different golfing features actually work quite well together.
Yeah, great. I mean, if you want to stay on, everyone, for the extended version, Matt will talk us through every single shot of his round at Castle Rock. So you're welcome to join. Because I actually, exactly 2 years ago, I played there as well with a listener of the podcast who absolutely loves it, Matthew Murphy. So shout out to him, who's a member there. It took me around 2 years ago for my birthday. And it is a great course. And I think that at 18 could cause some jeopardy with the OB on the right, pretty much, with the beach and water running besides it from memory. So it will be a great spectacle. And there's some great names in the field. If we have a look at the top of the market, we've got Robert McIntyre as favourite at 12-1, obviously really trying to cement that Ryder Cup spot. And we'll get into that shortly. Then Victor Perez just behind him, best price 16s, defending champion Ferguson at 18s. Then we've got Roman Langasca and Adrian Ategui at 22s. Matthew Jordan coming off the back of his good runners home open at Hoylake at 25-1, and then Callum Hill at 28, Laurie Canter 28, and the name I'm excited about, Tom McKibben, who's surely going to be given a bit of a hero's welcome and is getting everyone very excited about Hollywood once again. Not obviously Patrick Rogers' wife, but a different Hollywood in Northern Ireland. So that is the top of the market, and I'm interested to find out who you guys are throwing into the mix. So Martin, let's come to you first this time.
I'm a little bit like my momentum with Hideki over at the BMW. I'm taking Matthew Jordan to hopefully take the momentum from obviously his great week at Hoylake and step up and bag that first proper tour win. So, I think the thing we need to sort of remember with Matthew Jordan, is the Open wasn't just a sort of out of the blue big performance on his home track, but it was the culmination of some really good play that he's been putting together over the recent few months. So we've got 16th at the KLM, 22nd at the Porsche European Open, 9th in the Scandi Mixed, which, is interesting from the point of view. It's, we know how sort of psychology is a big thing. So he's performed well in the other sort of co-sanctioned men and women event recently. So solid in the British Masters, 34th, 17th in the Made in Himalayan. So his only bad performance, for want of a phrase, was plodding around the bottom of the field at the Scottish Open. But I'll happily excuse him that one based on the fact that I'm sure his focus was really coming up for Hoylake the following week. So he's produced a lot of really, really good golf of late. And there's two ways this could go, of course. He could be sort of, a bit of mental letdown coming back out on the bread and butter stuff, and perhaps he's sort of been spending some of the money and had his clubs away a bit and is a bit rusty and what have you. But I'm hoping it will go the other way, which is, everyone will be saying to him, come on, Matt, let's build on this, let's push on, let's, really go out now and show what you can do. And of course, this field is not the best quality field out there. There's obviously some strong names at the top of the field, but this isn't the best quality field out there. And again, as we see with these home soil, you know, sort of home countries type events. There's always a strong performance from the British and also Scandinavian contingency, but the British contingency always seem to do well on their sort of home turf. So he was the one who stuck out to me. He's solid in his approach play. He's on the good old-fashioned GIR. He's up there in the top 30 on tour. So he's the type of player I'm looking for. Of course, with the link, the out-and-out links track being on there now as well, we know he's a bit of a links specialist, not just at, you know, Hoylake. He's produced at other links type events as well. So so that was certainly a big plus point. And yeah, so he's only played the course once in as a professional couple of years back and missed the cut, unfortunately. But I'm not, you know, I think he's a far better player now, so I'm not too concerned about that. So yeah, I'm taking him to build on what he's done and push on and really ride the wave, as it were.
I actually had a very nice drink. My friend and myself had went to the pub at Hoylake on the Saturday night, got chatting to two guys, had a very nice chat, and then discovered one of them was Matthew Jordan's dad. And he was a lovely fella. Yeah, had a very nice chat and very proud of his son. I'll kick on to my selection, top selection, and it's Marcus Chinnott, the Swede. I'm going with a bit of that Lynx expertise, as I mentioned earlier. He won the Lytham Trophy as an amateur and then pottered down the coast a little bit to finish first at Hillside for his first win of the DP World Tour. Was third when they went back to that venue a couple of years ago. He also, if necessary, he's got a good record. Parkland, Between the Trees, Valderrama, Wentworth, Kenya. He's got top tens Between the Trees there. He's made 10 of his last 10 cuts. Last two of those were top 20s on the PGA Championship co-sanctioned events. I think he's in great form. He's never quite done his best golf in this event, but I think he's got a chance to do it. And also, he might have sort of a family connection this week because his sister Frieda is in the ladies' field. So, yeah, I quite like Marcus Chinnott this week. 33-1.
I liked him, Matt. You stole him from me. Well, not I liked him past tense. I do like him. So he was very much on my radar as well. I'm going to sort of give myself a brownie point if he wins as well, I think. So, one thing I'd add to it, I mean, everything you said spot on and exactly what I was thinking. But although he was MDF here last year, if you like, the sort of three-round cut that they have in this event, I think 35 get through to the final round. He shot 64 around Galgorm Castle last year on Friday, so which I think was the best round of the day, or I'll stand corrected on that. So I very much liked him as well, as you know, Matt, because we shared a stroll around 18 holes at Hillside earlier this year when you were over for the amateur. It's in my neck of the woods, and I was there when he won one up here a few years back. So very impressive player when he's on, and as you say, he's been producing some great stuff. But I decided to go for Callum Hill for my second pick, you know, Callum Hill, as I'm sure, well, has been well documented, had a bit of a horror time last year. He was out for the bulk of last year with, I wouldn't call it an injury. I think it stemmed from an insect bite. And he developed something, and I actually wrote this down because otherwise I thought I'll probably get it wrong. Nerve hypersensitivity. And basically it caused muscle spasms, which all stemmed from this insect bite. So he was, laid very low last year, and has talked obviously about how that was an incredibly tough time, particularly watching his sort of Scottish counterparts, perform really well while he had to sit it out. But he's come back this year, and he's starting to remind us that he was a top 100 player in 2021. He's a proven winner, he really, to me, looks like someone who's now going to get back to where he was threatening to get to. It has still been a little bit hit and miss this year from him, but he was fourth at the British Masters, which shows us that he likes a sort of a driving test on a Parkland course. His strength is his tee to green play, which is obviously what we're looking for this week. He was third back in the ISPS event earlier in the year, and that came after a month off, which I thought was interesting. So he's obviously someone who's able to produce the goods when he's fresh, if you like, which obviously a lot of these players are coming back after a bit of a break this week. So so he caught my eye. Most importantly, of course, he's a former winner of this event, albeit when it was on the Challenge Tour. So we know, of course, he likes his way around Galgon Castle. He was actually seventh when he was looking to defend it the following year as well. So so there was a lot about him to like. And I'm happy to go with him. He was 28th for seven places. I'm not sure if that's still available. Happy to go with him 1.5 points each way.
Callum Hill, there's a thread with Callum Hill that leads to my second pick, which is that he's one of many winners at Galgorm who've actually got a good record at a course called Adamstal in Austria on the Challenge Tour. So Callum Hill's won there as well. Ewan Ferguson's twice been second. Robin Schjott-Sigrist has finished third there. Daniel Gavins has got a top 10. So Adamstal seems like a good link-up with this week. It's another tree-lined golf course. And the winner this year was Casey Jarvis, who's just turned 20, a really, really highly regarded young South African golfer. Early this year, he carded a 59 in South Africa. And in addition to that, that victory last month in Austria, he had a 65 to open the Scottish Challenge last week. I think he's got a really good chance this week. I think there's quite a few players from the second tier. Matteo Manassero, we all know, is a very, very good player back on in the winner's circle this year, likes tree-lined golf course. I think he's got a great chance. And there's a guy called Brandon Robinson-Thompson, who did very well at the Open. He's actually won on this golf course on the Minor Tour, won on the Challenge Tour in Ireland this year. I think he's got a good chance. Just thought he's a little bit short in the prices. So I've gone with Casey Jarvis, the South African, as my second pick.
Lovely point each way at 80-1 there. And Callum Hill was 1.5 points, as was Matt Jordan at 22-1 and 25-1. And good research on the injury. I was looking through the research. I saw Frieda Shinholt playing, and her boyfriend won the other week. A lot of people talk about Victor Norman, who was actually looking at the form in this field 3 years ago or 2 years, which I didn't know. He was the 10th bookies favourite, coming off the back of the 10th, and I, good research, don't know where he finished, but he was actually in this field, and maybe it's where they met. Who knows? They probably met in Sweden on a golf course, but we'll go with they met at Galgorm Castle or this event anyway. Lovely stuff. And I think you've got one more longer shot to throw in, Martin.
Yeah, it's a very, very simple selection, this. Daniel Gavins, I just thought that his price was too big, really. I couldn't really understand his price. He's a past winner here. He's won at, and I'll pronounce this horribly wrong, I'm sure, but the Ras Al Khaimah event earlier this year. So, he's a proven winner. He won that event earlier this year on the back of not great form, but he comes in here. All right, he's not played particularly well his last couple of starts or so, but he was 12th at the Scandi Mixed. Again, an interesting sort of sideline, if you like, the fact that he's performed again well at the other mixed event earlier this year. So he was 12th at the Scandi Mixed not so long ago. So I just thought he was too big, to be honest. In this field, as a former winner who's won this year on tour, who's it's not like his game's fallen apart completely or anything like that. Just didn't really understand the price.
I'll just add my other selection, Ollie. I quite like Victor Perez. He's high up in the betting, so I've not bothered to mention him in too much detail, because a lot of the reasons why I like him are fairly obvious. But that Dunhill Links link that I mentioned earlier on, he's past winner of it, and then he's played this course once in 2018, and he was co-leader after 54 holes before finishing fourth. Quite a classy player, 12th at the PGA Championships this year. Made the cut in the Open, and if he's going to make a Ryder Cup debut, he's going to need a pretty good 3 or 4 weeks. So he needs to put his foot to the gas. And this looks like a place where his best golf can contend.
Great. Yeah, he's 16-1, still around the air in a point each way as well there from Matt. I mean, some great research in there from Challenge Tour to last year's absolutely everything. So hopefully some great stuff in there to help you make your selections and go with the guys, or at least direct you into looking at other courses. Plenty in there. So now we'll just do a quick recap before we get into the mailbag. Starting with Matt Cooper's selections this week, and he opened up with Xander Schauffele and Keegan Bradley in the BMW Championship with his extra selection of Canadian Corey Connors. And over on the DP World Tour, it was Victor Perez and Marcus Shinholt leading the way as his selections for the ISPS Handa World Invitational presented by Aviv Clinics, and his extra pick being Casey Jarvis. Martin Matthews responded with a big selection on John Rahm in the BMW Championship and Hideki Matsuyama as well, with extra selections of Sahith Tagala and Patrick Rogers from Married to Harry Potter fame as well. And then following that, on the DP World Tour, it was Matthew Jordan and Callum Hill heading his selections, despite also liking Marcus Shinholt, and then Mr. Gavins finishing off his round selections this week on the DP World Tour. Yes, thank you to you both who jumped onto Twitter to get some questions from the fans. And as always, they're Ryder Cup themed. Everyone's talking about it. It's just around the corner. We're all very excited. We have spoken to Matt a few weeks ago about his selections, Martin, especially in the wildcard area. But you had one thrown at you, which I want to dive into and get your thoughts on. It's from James Forrest, a.k.a. Jimbo. And he's asking about Bob McIntyre. Bob heads up the field this week in the betting, as we've mentioned. And he basically wonders, does he get in the team? Does he deserve a spot? Would he make yours?
Yes, is the short answer. I see Bob Mack, obviously, he's a little bit further down the track from an experience point of view, of course, but I see him as sort of Europe's Sahith Tagala, if you like. You know, he's a bit of a maverick. He's a flamboyant character. He's got the short game. He loves playing in the big events. And I see Bobby Mack as someone who will rise to playing in the Ryder Cup. So, I mean, obviously, as things stand, he's in the selection spots anyway, but on the European list, if you like. So, I would certainly have him in there if he somehow sort of slipped out of those spots. I would I'd be giving him, you know, he'd be one of my wild cards. I think he will rise to the Ryder Cup challenge. Don't know what Matt thinks, but I'd have him in there.
Yeah, you might remember, Ollie, I talked about Adrian Maronk, and I discovered something a little bit unusual last week at Walton Heath. So lots of us are well aware that Adrian Maronk has the possibility of becoming the first Polish Ryder Cup player. But perhaps not many of us know that for the last 10 years, there has been a half Pole playing in the Solheim Cup, because I discovered that Charlie Hull's mother is Polish and her grandmother has an absolutely sensational backstory. So she was 15 when the Second World War started and she got herself involved with the Polish resistance. She was eventually captured by the Russian army, who shipped her out to a prisoner of war camp in Siberia. She escaped from it and made her way to Baghdad, which anybody who's any good at geography will know is like a spectacularly long way at the south. There she met her husband, Joseph, and this is the bit that, to that point, it's a spectacularly brave and courageous story. At this point, it becomes a little bit comical. So the couple married and were given the option of going to Argentina, America, or England, and they chose to go to Kettering, possibly one of the wilder geographical choices you've ever heard of. But that's all good. Charlie was fantastic last week, of course, and finished second in the AIG Women's Open, second in the majors this season. So she is half Polish. And she told me she actually was offered to represent Poland when she was a youngster. But she's also an exceptionally proud English woman. So she said, no, I'm definitely going to be representing England. So there's quite a Polish connection to Europe's hopes in the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup this September.
Yeah, I love Matt Cooper's story time more than anything for a number of reasons. One, that came to you with Martin going, I don't know what you think about Bob McIntyre. And you go, well, let me tell you about the Polish. But we spoke anyway, and we know Bob McIntyre's in your team. And I think we can all agree, Kettering's often called the Argentina of England. So yeah. Charlie picked beautifully there and played her golf thing, and I've woven a lot growing up. So an amazing story. Lovely stuff. We had another question sent in the mailbag, again, Ryder Cup focus. And this is on the back of another Glover win. Let's be honest. And Ben mentioned it last week. He said, God, it'd be nice if Lucas Glover, not verbatim, but it'd be great if Lucas Glover could win and take another spot to give the Americans more of a headache. And Matt, this might have happened. So this came from Oliver Inwoods. And he said, with Wyndham Clark taking spot, Brian Harman, and now looking like potentially Lucas Glover, Do you think with three, let's say, pretty new faces, especially to the Ryder Cup scene, potentially getting spots, do you think that really increases chances and confidence for Team Europe?
Well, I think everybody would kind of say yes, because what we're thinking is it's better to be up against that trio than an in-form Justin Thomas or an in-form Sam Burns or an in-form Dustin Johnson if he was in position to do so. But the flip side of that is those three golfers are actually playing better golf than those golfers that we're talking about. So you could simply argue that they're very good golfers who are beating high-quality fields, and they're going to be quite difficult to defeat. But I think ultimately, if you were Luke Donald, I think you would probably be happier that if Glover and Clark and Harmon are on the team, you'll be happier than the prospect of what might have seemed when you were taking the job on last summer. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a positive for Europe. It's less intimidating, I think, than those. But remember, like Whistling Straits, everyone said this is a fantastic team, possibly the best American team since Walton Heath in 81, which was famous for being the best of the lot. Now I don't think anybody would be intimidated to the same degree.
I see. I get your point. I do think that Glover's been given a little bit of a tough rep here, not by you in particular, Matt, but just in general with some of the stuff I've seen online. I've heard the sort of comment about sort of, you know, he'd be taking a spot potentially from an elite player. And I totally get an informed Justin Thomas obviously trumps any of these guys we're talking about. But Glover's a major champion. Yes, he's had the putting yips, but he is, you know, one of the best ball strikers we've seen on the PGA Tour in the last, 10 plus years, week in, week out, as a sort of tee to green protagonist. And if he has solved the putting, which I, you know, is an if, obviously, because it could just be a sort of, honeymoon period still, then he's going to be around for a while longer, producing some really strong performances. But from a Ryder Cup point of view, obviously, as a foursomes player, then his tee to green strengths could be massive. So, you know, is there anything to say that when careers are done, that Lucas Glover won't be as an elite performer based on his record so far, never mind what he produces, than say a Cam Young or something like that? So, Justin Thomas, totally get, but I think Glover is you know, certainly an elite ball striker, he's a major champion and now six times tour winner. So, and I guess the other thing, sorry, I know you're bursting to get in on me there, Matt, but the other thing I'd just say is that we're only a three Ryder Cups from when the US team saw Billy Horschel sat at home because they'd picked their team, and then he went and obviously tore it up in the playoffs after they'd picked their team. So they thought, well, we're not going to let that happen again. We'll change our selection timelines and what have you. So the next time Ryan Moore got in as a hot hand at the last minute, and he produced the goods, and I think he held the winning putt as well. Tony Finau got in the back of his strong performance in the playoffs following that. So there's a proven track record for taking the hot hand, and the advantage, I guess, of the playoffs finishing a little bit sooner before the Ryder Cup is it won't be quite like Ryan Moore, who's like, well, you're in 10 days time and it's all a bit of a whirlwind. Glover does have a bit of time to, you know, recharge the batteries a little bit. So, I guess my very short answer to my very long waffly answer is that I'd have him in, and I'd have him in over a Cam Young, certainly at the moment, or a Tony Finau. So a lot of people would agree with that.
The only thing I was going to add was that Brian Harman played a couple of Walker Cups and had quite a good record in it. So, and actually did say at the press conference when someone asked about the Ryder Cup, do you like match play? And his eyes lit up and said, yes, I do. So they might not be a pushover.
I was on him at the World Match Play a couple of years ago when he got a place. So, and part of the absolute lights out he did at whatever that course is they use over in Texas. Yeah. He's proven in match play.
I love it when the podcast comes full circle. We're back to the Walker Cup, which was Tom Lewis and James Byrne in 2011 delivering the goods. So I think what we've learned is there that Europe are going to win it pretty easily. And I'm super excited because there's a video going around on social today. I don't know if you've seen it, of the rough, which is the classic video, but it is carnage at Marcus May. Talk about America proofing it and Europe advantage. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And thank you guys. That pretty much sums up this week's podcast. But before we say goodbye to you and thanks again, let's just remind the people where they can find you on social media. So if they've got any questions when you're next on the mailbag, they can send it through. So Martin, just remind us where they can find you.
Yeah, Martin Matthews at Sundog Monkey on Twitter.
And I'm at Matt Cooper Golf on Twitter.
Great stuff. So they are the handles to send in all of the thanks when you get hopefully some winners this week. So good luck with your bets. And we look forward to you joining us next time on The Tips, where we will be previewing the D&D Czech Masters and the finale of the PGA Tour season, the Tour Championships. See you then.